This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. And welcome to the Doc and Guru podcast. This is the guru just flying solo because the doc has given me permission today to spend some time with one of my oldest and dearest friends in the advertising industry, Virginia Hollis. Welcome to the studio and congratulations on your AdFocus Lifetime Achievement Award. It's incredibly overdue and incredibly well-deserved.
Thank you, Gordon. It's great to be here.
And tell us a little bit about the night itself. I mean, did they manage to take you by surprise this time or... Yeah, you're shaking your head at me, you know? No surprises.
No, you know what? I mean, you do know. When somebody comes along and wants to interview you, and you're me, and you go, you can't interview me. I've been out of mainstream media for 7 years, unless you tell me why. And I can be a bully, so shame. Lynette gave up eventually, and she told me why. And then I promised I wouldn't say anything, and I promised I'd act surprised.
Well, you did say something, so, I mean... We'll get to the, you know, sort of your life in media in a moment. But I mean, on the night, obviously, I saw some pictures of you. I must be honest, they were not the most flattering pictures of you I've ever seen. But what were you saying? What did you say to the folks on the night? Because you were one of a number of award winners.
Yeah, I was the only one who was allowed to speak, though, which was interesting. I just said thank you.
You were allowed to speak, or did you just insisted on speaking?
Well, I did ask if I could.
There we go. The truth, you told me the truth is going to come out one way or the other.
So, yes, I asked if I could just say thank you. I mean, I think it's important to say thank you because it is an honor to be given a Lifetime Achievement Award, and you don't want to just accept it and walk off. So I wanted to say thank you, and I also wanted to tell everybody, well, if you think this is me retiring, sorry for you. You've got me for a long time still. There's no way I'm going away anytime soon.
Oh, yeah, the curse of the Lifetime Achievement Award. My business turnover plummeted 50% the year after I got it because everyone had thought it was posthumous, you know. So here we are. I mean, I think you're probably my oldest and dearest friend in the media business. We've been in this business an awful long period of time. I mean, did we catch the golden age, or is the golden age still coming? When was the golden age? I mean,
oh, come on, Gordon. The golden age was in those days when we actually used to go to lunch at 12 o'clock and not come back until 8 o'clock at night, if we came back at all. Those were golden days because we didn't have technology.
But technology is supposed to save us time and make things easier. How come we were able to get work done by lunchtime and then spend the rest of the afternoon negotiating, I think is the word you're looking for, lunching.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, yes. Absolutely negotiating. But, if you think about it, in those days, we had books. We didn't have technology. We couldn't sit there and reconfigure some more just to see if we could make the figures look better. We literally had a column of figures, and you looked at a column of figures, and you went, okay, so the Sunday Times reaches that many people. And that's
it. It was a function of choice. It's become a lot more multi... faceted and a lot more time to come to one conclusion.
And we had less. We had less media. If you think about it, in the days when we started, we had one TV station. And we were buying TV a year in advance. Yeah. And we were telling the guys that we wanted 30 spots in October, please. And they would give you 4 in February, 10 in June. And they would just do whatever they liked.
Quite extraordinary. In 1978, you got 12 spots as your primary allocation. And then you got an additional up to 4 spots, depending on, inter alia, your market share, the amount of money that you'd spent the previous year. And then there was something which was Factor X. And it was only about 10 years later that the SABC confessed that Factor X was pretty much what they decided. Yeah. So you remember the wars when you got 12 spots, but your competitor got 13, and you had to explain why they got
more than you.
They got more than you. Marvelous.
And if you were launching a new brand, it was a case of, well, you know, we can only give you 4 spots that week. And you go, I'm launching a new brand.
That's right.
Brand.
There was a new brand launch. I forgot about that. That was another way. So you just kept creating new variants just so you could get some advertising pressure behind your brand.
And then got help. You know, you had no chance of actually trying to combine any of your campaigns either. You couldn't do that. No, that was unacceptable. If you try to combine your brands into one campaign, nope, they took half your spots away.
So how did you, let's get back to the beginning then. I mean, how did you get into business in the first place? I mean, I seem to remember somewhere along the line you were with Caxton, you were a newspaper.
I sold ad space in the Krugersdorp News.
Are you a Krugersdorp girl?
No.
Oh,
no,
I was never worried there. I'm just... thought maybe hadn't revealed something to me all these years.
My first boss, I was in computers in the computer industry. Well, in those days, they used to do training, computer programming training. And so I worked for this guy who was an old advertising guy. And he said to me, Virginia, you're in the wrong business. You need to be in media. And I had no idea what media was. So he had this friend, Dougie Fenech. You remember Dougie?
Oh, my goodness. Naughty Douglas. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Oh.
And he introduced me to Dougie. It was the most awful job in the world for me, going and knocking on doors and trying to sell little 5x2s with these horrible little 1940s drawings, and you're trying to sell somebody's, I don't know, suits, his suit shop or something. And it was awful. I lasted 6 months. I think I was the worst rep in the world. I think they couldn't wait to get rid of me.
Well, at least now I know how you got to do the lunching thing, because Douglas was one of the most lovable characters I've ever met in this industry. And he was the king or the legend in his own lunchtime, Doug. I mean, he really was. Yeah.
You found him in the Union Club from, I think, 10 o'clock in the morning, from the time it opened. And that was it. If we needed him for something, we would go to the Union Club. And, of course, you had to stand outside because we weren't allowed inside the men's bar.
Quite right, too, in my opinion. I mean, there's absolutely – there were standards in those days which have since declined.
Sorry, there's none anymore. We're all allowed in.
And then you moved in to the media business with, one of the media industry's most delightful, charming jobs.
I really did pick them. You know that. I really did have a wonderful way of picking my partners. Brian, he was interesting. And I reckoned if I could actually handle that man for a period of time, I could handle anyone. And I think that really did set me up because he was probably one of the most disagreeable people you could ever meet in your entire life.
Yeah, he didn't tolerate fools lightly, Brian. I must admit, I've been on, all of us as young planners were on the back end of tongue lashing from Brian at some point or other.
He used to throw telephones at people.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And poor old Tony Bannerhan, I really felt sorry for him. He used to just, he just didn't want to go anywhere near the man. And the girls, I had to keep them far away from him because he would just scream. Oh, no, he had a terrible temper. But he was also a very generous human being. Which I must give him that. He was very generous, and if you were in trouble, he would be there to help you out. But hell if you got on the wrong side of him.
Mm-mm. But I think you touched on something interesting there, you know, and it's that sort of duality of the role. They were business leaders, and in my case, I mean, I think of guys like Paul Wilkins, who, and we both have a mutual regard for Ian Snelling, who, those guys, they were tough with you, and they smacked you around the head if you didn't know what you were talking about, but they spent time with you, they shared their knowledge, they were not afraid to give information and to teach you, and I would certainly say the best school, you know, was sitting and buying, cost you a couple of beers with Ian Snelling and Paul Wilkins, but they were not scared to give. So Where's that gone? Where,
yeah. It's so sad. I think, you know, I'd like to think that it hasn't disappeared completely. But, I mean, I remember Ian being my boss for quite a long time, and he taught me strategy. He used to mark my strategies with a red pen. I felt like I was back at school. But he taught me so much, and he taught me how to put forward an argument in writing, which is really quite difficult. And I think that that's one of the biggest problems that you have today is that the youngsters who are strategists, if a client comes up to you and says, but why? I don't understand why. They find it very difficult to give the real reason as to why they're suggesting that you should be doing something, and something particular. And I don't know how you teach that.
Yeah, look, I think that's an interesting thing. And I think it's the insights versus information. We, you know, I mean, 90% of, and I blame PowerPoint for it. I mean, you know, because PowerPoint is a marvelous way to show that you've got 90 slides full of information rather than, you know, 10 slides full of insight. And I think that's where we've gone wrong. We've equated information with insight.
Let's face it. I mean, a 90-slide presentation is something that a lot of people want to do. And then when they do it, and then you're me. I mean, 90 slides will probably take me 4 hours to present. Whereas 10 slides is probably an hour, which is what you really want to do. But these guys who just want to churn out more and more and more slides just because they want to show you this is how you can define that readership figure, but if you turn it on its head this way, that's what you get. No. Yeah. You know, come out with the answer succinctly and as quickly as possible so you can have a debate with your client or a conversation.
You know, how much of that, you know, criticism do we level at clients who've kind of equated media to just a numbers game, and it's become a procurement issue rather than a marketing issue. So I don't have any skin in the game anymore, because all I've got to do is give procurement a discount, and everyone's happy. Whereas in the old days, I had to persuade a client that I might have an impact on his bottom line.
Well, I think that's one of our biggest problems, is that procurement owns media, and that should never happen. I mean, we've got gazillions of years between the two of us in experience, and procurement comes along and says, well, I'm going to give you 1%. What?
Yeah.
Am I not worth the same as a doctor? If you're going to pay a doctor 2,000 rand an hour, for example, and you want their knowledge, you want to know that they've gone through to school and they know exactly what they're doing and they're diagnosing you correctly. If you're coming to me as a media person and you're giving me 100 million rand to invest, do you not want to give me to know that I can actually give you the value that you deserve? So why are you only going to give me 1%, or you're going to give me the equivalent of 100 rand?
I think what's interesting for me is that quite correctly in the Ad Focus, you were described as an unsung hero. Oh. And I mean, I know when you came and begged me to work on industry committees all those years ago.
Excuse me. Please, anybody who's listening to this, it's the other way around.
So, and I know that since those days when you and I worked together on those committees, you have given away your intellectual capital the last 20 years. So how do you differentiate? When do you give something away which you've done and that's just what you've been recognized for as an unsung hero? And when do you charge for it? How do you draw the line?
There's not enough of us, Gordon, anymore that are prepared to spend the time to nurture, to grow, to develop young talent. I love working with young people and I like them asking me questions. And I don't mind them asking me the same question 20 times. But I do want to at least know that I'm making an impression on them so that when I ask them a question in return, they can give me something of value back. I have no problem with giving people time. I won't give people time if they're in a position to pay me. So when a youngster comes along and says, please, I want you to help me with something, no problem. Never been a problem. But if it's a commercial entity, no, that's not right. Commercial entities should pay for our intellect. But young talent that needs developing, no, they shouldn't. They should have access to us. And they should have access to more people like us. And there's a lot of them in the industry.
Well, that poses the next question. When I look at the way we're hemorrhaging good people, you know, I would love to see an initiative which allows people who have been discarded to play this kind of mentoring role. Because like me, you're in and out of agencies, you're in and out of clients, and there seems to be a void between senior management and board level and then beginners. Very, very little access to skills and sit by Nelly type learning particularly in agencies, or maybe I'm missing it. Are you
seeing that? No, but not just agencies, also in marketing
and media sales as well, I guess.
But everywhere, because, I mean, the guys move up the ladder, and then you have the youngsters coming in, and there's that great big gap, as you talk about. But there's also so many people in our who are, I would like to say, of similar age, but that sounds terrible. But they have not been thrown aside by the industry, but maybe they've retired. And why the industry is not trying to suck them back in a way where they can still earn some money. They don't have to earn necessarily a lot of money, but where they can earn some money and give back and help grow this industry that is so desperately in need of skills. And as you said, we're hemorrhaging. Every time somebody gets up to a level, they get poached. And I hear that from all the agencies. They get so frustrated because these kids are poached all the time. And you go, well, it's your own fault for not developing enough. Yeah. So if you had 10 coming through and you lost 4, it wouldn't be so bad. But when you have 2 coming up and you lose 1, it's a hell of a thing.
Let's loop back a little bit in time. I mean, so from the independent, I mean, I think we often think of the media shop as the first independent, but
Media business was 6 months ahead.
Yeah, so you literally were the very first independent.
I was.
And from there, moved into the bigger FCB, big
FCB Global.
There.
Yeah, when media business shut down, we moved into, Harry Herber said, come along, come and join us and be our media independent. So I actually said to Harry the one day, I said, Harry, I don't think you know who I am. Of course I know who you are, babe. That was Harry.
Yeah, that was Harry. Yeah, no, that's it. Always politically correct, dear Harry, yeah?
Yeah, and then, I mean, from there, then about a couple of years later, Harry said, okay, it's time to move forward, and FCB had bought the media shop, and he said, we're going to merge the two. I was horrified. I didn't want to go into a big agency. I liked being small and nimble. Big agencies are cumbersome, and they don't move as fast. And he said, no choice here. Off you go. So we combined the two, which was really difficult from a culture point of view, because you come from a small agency and you then merge with a big agency. Your people are used to, you know, just doing their own thing, basically, but they get the job done, whereas there's rules in place with a big agency. My people battled with that, and the big agency battled with us. But we got it together, and it sorted itself out eventually.
Yeah, and then, I mean, then we go forward again into the sort of
2012.
Yeah, okay, I was getting my decades mixed up, let alone my years. So, I mean, I know that it was your concern that corporate life had become a little bit oppressive for you. So that kind of reporting, which you saw in the mid-90s, what's the level of reporting like now?
It's horrible. Oh, I feel so sorry for the people in the global agencies now. I mean, you have to report every single cent just about. And everything is about cost per point. Everything is about procurement, as you said earlier. It's. I just couldn't do that. And I can't. I joined media for a reason. I wanted to be in media and work and write strategy. I wanted to make a difference from that point of view. I didn't want to report to a global master and have to worry about the fact that, is it 3,000 Rand cost per point or 4,000 Rand cost per point? I didn't want to do that anymore. And yeah, I gave up the big job and walked away and said, okay, if I don't try and do my own thing now, I never will. So, I mean, I looked at you and went, you did it. I can do it. And I think we even had conversations around
it. Oh, plenty.
As well.
Yeah. I mean, I think you said, and you're quite right in the write-up and Ad Focus that, you know, you were a sounding board for when I wrote the book. And I think that's been the wonderful thing about the industry is that we've had sounding boards that you could trust and bounce ideas off without being afraid that someone's going to nick your idea. I'm not entirely sure that that's still the case. But
no, I'd be careful nowadays.
Yeah, I think you have to be. So if I look back, I mean, I know that we would always have the old adage that to be a good media person, you had to be a good advertising person first. And I think if you go through the names, you know, we talked about Harry, we talked about Snellers, we talked about Paul, and any one of and Brian for that matter.
Gordon Patterson.
Gordon Patterson, great advertising people. Mm. What does it take now to be a good media person?
Sure, that's a big question. I think, first of all, you've actually got to really like the job. I think that there's too many people who go into business nowadays who do the job because it's a job. You've got to love media. You've got to look at numbers and go, they excite me. You know, that I want to find a solution. And I don't want to just find a media solution for clients. I want to find an advertising solution. And it doesn't mean that you have to draw a picture. For many, many years, when in the dark ages, when we first started, Gordon, we were pushed down to the bottom of the building. Yep. You know, go and sit in the corner over there. They're media people. Please don't pay attention to them. That has completely changed now because media is such an important part of that mix. But it's part of. It's not the only. And I think that's where a lot of media agencies lost their way, especially in the 2000s, probably 1999 to 2009. They lost their way to a large degree because they became numbers driven, and it was all about the bottom line and let's discount as much as we possibly can so we can steal people's business. Today, with the age of digital, and with the solutions that you have to provide in the digital arena, you have to be far more than media. You need to look at the solution for the client in the digital area. So you need the content person. You need the analytics person. You need the insights person. So can you be all of that to a client? I think sometimes you can, depending on the client and depending on how well you work with the client. Maybe you need all four different people. You need four different people. But I do think that that's where we need to be. Nowadays, I think the kids need to be there. They need to be a solutions solver as against just a plain media person.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Yeah, I think, and you're bringing it back to the business environment. We were connected with marketing outcomes. We had a stake in the campaign. And if you were lucky and performing well, you might even get to the odd creative review and write an ad or do a piece of radio copy, which I think was the highlight. And one name we haven't mentioned in that regard was Ellen McClarty. I mean, Ellen McClarty is the best example of a media man who was just brilliant because he was just a great ad man. I mean, he could write copy. He could do anything at all. He just happened to be good at media as well.
And, you know, he started in creative, though. That's what he wanted to be.
Yeah,
and he
right.
ended up in media, which was really weird.
Yeah.
I remember him with a paper bag over his head.
Yes, indeed. Well, now, you see, now, you told me before this interview that what goes on tour stays on tour. And I wasn't going to ask you what, you know, goes on tour, but now you've opened the can of worms. So what does go on tour? Because I've got a couple of stories I would just like to verify with you.
Be careful, you know, Mr. Muller. I love you. You know,
is it true that at one point during a presentation at a major cocktail event, things were so boring that you actually then got under the table because you felt it was more interesting there?
Well, it was more interesting underneath there because you and Brian Barnard were underneath there too. it was very funny. Yeah. But I mean, there were all those other things as well. I mean, we had one of the things I think about our industry, and I think I'm very grateful to have come through the time of the 80s, the 90s, because we had so much fun, and we actually became almost like a family. We knew each other all so well because we would spend a lot of time together doing crazy, mad things. But there was no harm done, and I think that was the main thing. I mean, a couple of people nearly died, but other than that. We had good fun. We had a lot of fun in those days. I think people have forgotten how to do that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, again, it comes back to time. You know, it's very difficult to have fun when you're filling in a report, you know, the same report you filled in last week and the week before that. And it is the energy.
Into a pitch.
Are we preparing? I mean, if you think about it from the mindset of young people, are we preparing for the reality of media? I mean, we go in, we talk creativity. We do wonderful workshops. Are we killing them before they even get going?
I think to a large degree, yeah. I think we are because, you know, media can be fun, but it is numbers. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it really is. But it's about how you unpack those numbers and how you make it interesting for yourself and your client. That's the important thing. And it's difficult. It's very difficult when you're a junior and you literally said, you get thrown something and it's a case of go and analyze all these ADEX figures. Horrible job, but someone's got to do it and you've got to start there. And then eventually you can start unpacking and looking at things in more detail and having some fun with the numbers. But it's hard now. I think that technology has made it so difficult.
Yeah. And I think you can carbon date somebody in media by whether they still refer to the information from Nielsen is ADEX, which I do. I haven't mastered all the new names. It's morphed itself. But ADEX, we understand. We get all that. But you've really in recent years put your money where your mouth is, in the sense of getting closer to clients, working in a very tight environment. I know in your latest incarnation, you're working very much in the content space. So tell us a little bit about the mix and how you're managing to get all those elements together. And again, or not necessarily in one place, that you're working, you're partnering across disciplines.
Yeah, I think that's what it's about nowadays. It's, first of all, you've got to keep yourself busy and you've got to keep yourself interested. And content is the hot buzzword, and it has been for a while, and it's not going to go away. But it's how you do that content. I mean, for me, content... 120 characters on Twitter is not content necessarily. I mean, it's what you say and how you say it and how you make it interesting. So there's so many different ways of doing things like that. So my way of doing content is not going to do Twitter, but my way of doing content is taking programming, proper television programming, because television is still a very important part of the media landscape. That's not going to go away in a hurry. And take that content and use that content in the social space as well. So, and you can. Clients can integrate beautifully into that content if it's done correctly and it's done professionally. I mean, you don't want something just thrown in. And I've seen some really nasty examples of badly placed integration. But if it's done well, it is seamless and it works for everybody. And it's a costly exercise nowadays for TV stations to produce local content. Yes. Very expensive. And this is one way of them being able to afford local content, which our local viewers love, and you get clients to benefit out of it at the same time. It's a win-win.
Yeah, and you were talking about things cost, and I know one of your pet bugbears, and I know at the Ad Focus Awards you made mention of it, and you know is the issue of just squeezing small companies with diminishing margins and 5 months, you know, payment in 5 months terms and stuff like that. I mean, you know, how do you sort of stand your ground on that? Where do you draw the line? How do you draw the line? I mean,
I think it's horrible what companies are doing to small business right now. I heard a story yesterday, and I don't think I should actually mention the company because it wouldn't be right. But they told this small agency that they were going to pay them 120 days. And if they didn't like it, too bad. And this small agency was doing about 2 million rand a month. Now, you're now telling this agency, the small agency, they must bankroll you, because they literally are having to bankroll because they still have to pay the suppliers. And that's not fair. That is not growing the country. It's not growing small business that can then employ a whole lot of new people. That's a disgrace. And that's global businesses. And I think that if I do the job, pay me the terms that I ask for. Media, I don't understand how the big global agencies are handling 120-day payment, Gordon. I don't, because they still have to pay media 45 days.
Well, so that's how? The point. So, you know, I mean, I think the real victim there, apart from anybody else, is the small advertiser, because if you're paying me 120, I'm paying the media maybe, you know, 45, probably closer to 90. So you run an ad in January, I'll pay you in July. There's only one way you can recoup that, and that's by putting your rates up, which means it's a small advertiser at the end of the day that's bankrolling this whole process, as well as the small agency.
I just think it's a vicious circle, and somewhere along the line it's just got to give. I mean, it's got to implode. You can't have this kind of thing happening. So what will happen is the bigger guys will get bigger and bigger and bigger because they can afford to bankroll, and the smaller guys will disappear.
And the nuance will disappear with it. We recently had a podcast with the Napster, and we were just talking about, you know, the importance of nuance. So, you know, small agencies very often more nuanced, more entrenched in the local community, and able to touch communities at the heart level rather than just steamrolling gigantic campaigns through.
And often able to deliver faster.
Yeah,
because within the big agencies, they've got rule, they've got processes. Small agencies can react quickly and they can deliver something in 24 hours. Big agencies, it's difficult to do that kind of thing because they've got to go through a specific process to get the work out. So I don't know what the answer is here, but I do think that somewhere along the line, big business needs to look at itself and say, are we doing what's right for the industry? And quite frankly, no, you're not.
Yeah, you know, and I totally agree with you. I would just pose one question. Is the industry itself doing enough? And we've got bodies with respect like the Advertising Media Forum, which are silent on just about every single issue, you know, that's, you know, occasioned itself in the last decade. I haven't seen or heard a statement from the AMF in a long time. I mean, or are they the recipients of the largesse of big clients? Are they basically non-aligned with small agencies?
Well, I don't think they are aligned with the small agencies. I don't think they can be because they're big. But I do think that this puts a huge amount of pressure on them too. But I think that they're caught in a very nasty situation, because if they are seen to complain constantly, then they get left off the pitch list. You know, so it's a vicious circle for them. So they've got to almost just give in, and they're not helping. But I do sit there and I do hear them complain. What they do about it, I don't know. If there's conversations that happen behind the scenes, I don't know. But it is affecting our industry terribly.
Yeah, I you know, certainly it's something we flag for going forward. We'll be going to have the AMF and at some point, just to try and give us a sense of where they're going. But let's bring it back onto a personal level now. Thinking back over the years, as a media person, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
The best piece of advice I've ever been given?
Apart from trust me.
Oh, okay. So the best piece of advice probably would be always look at every single campaign that's put in front of you with completely fresh eyes. Don't look at something and go, how can I cut and paste this? Because I really don't have the time. Every single job that you are given by a client has to be looked at as if it's the first time you've ever come across this particular problem, so that you can then give them something that is going to work for them. Because not all solutions work for everybody. So you have to do something that's unique, and that's what keeps your clients happy with you, because they know that you actually care and that you are actually going that extra mile for them. I've seen it too many times where people cut and paste presentations. They lift 10 slides from that one and 2 slides from this one, and then they just put this mess together and they send it off to a client and say, there's your solution. No. The solution has to be bespoke for the client, always.
Yeah, and I think that's really sound insight, because, and it doesn't necessarily imply that you have to change everything. If you interrogate it with fresh eyes and you come to the conclusion that what you did last year is still appropriate,
you can proceed,
but now you're doing it for the right reasons. You're doing it because it's the right thing to do, not just because that's what you did last year.
And I think the other thing that was always something that Ian Snelling said to me is, look at your target market first. Really, really look at your target market and what you're trying to achieve. And is the target market that you've defined here or your client has given you correct? Because if it isn't, that's where you have to start. Because if you're not speaking to the right people, then your campaign is a complete waste. So start there.
Yeah, and starting with target market and starting with the campaign, it terrifies me. I wonder what percentage of media planners out there right now putting stuff together while we're talking have actually seen, stroke, heard, or listened to the campaign that they're actually planning on.
Probably none.
You know, I've never got my head around it. How do you plan on a creative campaign if you've never seen the content? That just defies logic.
And it's not rocket science. Often these campaigns are, you know, you're going to run the creative from last year. So it's easy, it's there, it's accessible. Or you ask the creative agency, even if they give you the script, at least you can read the script. Or you can look at a billboard and get some kind of sense of feel for what it is. But I don't even think the planners look at the client's websites. I mean, some of the websites are horrible, but I mean, you still have to go there and look at them and get a feel for what the client's trying to do. And they don't do that.
Yeah.
But I think that's also a function of time, Gordon.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. And one of the things which is being offered to the industry is the great time saver. And again, I did rather chuckle when I read about it in the Ad Focus review on you. And I think I'm quoting something along the lines of, Virginia rolls her eyes when you talk about digital programmatic. You're doing it again right now. So I think that whoever wrote that piece on you got it right. You're rolling your eyes again.
Yeah. I hate programmatic buying. I think it's lazy. And I'm the victim of programmatic buying. I get stuff thrown at me all the time. And I'm going, what on earth are you doing targeting me? And I think that media people are actually probably the best people to look at programmatic buying and go, this is so wrong. Because what happens is you have to go and do some research. I had to go and do some research on transport seminars overseas. I got a flipping ad sent to me about Scania trucks and all the rest of it for about 6 months.
I think you'd look quite good in a set of overalls behind a scan. Yeah, you're a bit of a bush baby. I know, because you're
bush
going.
Bush baby, yes.
Yeah, you're going off to the bush next week, are you not, John?
Friday, here we come. Kruger, here we come, but not in a truck.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that I find really frustrating. And I mean, it's the other thing. I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, I'm of an age now where Huggies really, I'm not interested in Huggies nappies, but I will get Huggies.
I am sadly, you know, more advanced than you. I'm developing an extraordinary interest in Huggies adult nappies, I'm afraid, at my stage of life. So that does probably separate us a little bit in terms of the age grouping. But just a couple of last thoughts as we wrap it up now. Looking at the young people in the industry, you know, I mean, you've been a big believer, and you've lived it rather than talked about it, of paying it forward. So what advice would you give to young people coming into the industry? What advice would you give to people, young people who are in the industry? How do they cope with this tidal wave of change that's heading in that direction? In fact, it's arrived. It's here.
You know. It's here. I mean, it's a really difficult one, because it's so different now to where we were. Technology is something that is a huge benefit today, but it shouldn't be the be-all and end-all. You should not let technology run your campaigns for you. You should not just be planning, optimizing. That you can't do. You have to give your plans some thought. And if there's anything I can say to youngsters who are coming into the business, come into the business with your eyes wide open. A lot of them come into media thinking, oh, it's a place where people have fun. There's lots of parties. There's lots of freebies. That's not what media is. I mean, media is hard work. We work really hard in this business. Part of the reward is maybe a party or something, you know, something nice that can happen for you. But it's not the reason you come into this business. You come into this business because you want to be a problem solver, and you want to help clients invest their money, not spend it, invest it. So you need to have that thought in your head when you start as a media planner, as a media buyer, as a strategist. But you need to have that. The whole idea behind being a media person is not the same as it was. Technology is always going to lead, but you have to create the magic behind the numbers, because numbers aren't going to give you any answers at the end of the day. It's the magic you put to the numbers that gives you the answers.
I think magic is a marvelous point on which to wrap up our chat. I'm just, you know, one last thought and one last question here. I mean, you know, you're pretty much the first lady of media. When we were youngsters, we talked about mother.
Joy.
It was Joy. Yeah. So, okay, we all know Joy Wormsley was mother. Mm. But, I mean, we've lost Joy a while back now. Mm. I mean, when can I start calling you mother?
If I was older than you, maybe. Otherwise, I'll have to call you grandpa.
I'm no problem with that one. So you're the de facto new mother. How do you feel about your status as the first lady, the mother of media?
Well, you know, I mean, I remember the days of Master when we used to run those Master workshops, and we used to have dads. Remember, we used to have we called the sweeper-uppers, the guys who were making sure the kids all got to bed, the dads, and that was Dave Frankel and Kevin Kirby.
Goodness, with the thought of leaving these young people to the attentions of those young scoundrels, but nevertheless.
But it's what we used to do. But yeah. I think the mother figure is something that is actually a really nice, it's really nice to be called that, because I wouldn't call myself the first lady of media, I certainly wouldn't. But I think I'm old enough to say, okay, I've earned my stripes, so if you want to come and get some advice from me, I'm happy to give it, you know. But there's a lot of very senior ladies in this industry who are really good, and they probably deserve that first lady position more than I do.
And, well, maybe a topic for the new year, but, you know, talking about this, ladies in the industry, women in the industry, do you feel, you know, there's been any shift in terms of the structure of the industry? I mean, it was pretty tough for women back in the 80s to be taken seriously. Do you think there's been a shift? Have we made progress, or we still got the same mountain to climb?
I think we've still got a long way to go. I think there's been, certain agencies who've certainly made strides in the area, but I think the vast majority haven't made enough. I think media is a woman's industry. The attention to detail that's required is something that women are really good at. So I think that women need to be positioned up more I think transformation is sad. And I think that we need to be a lot more cognizant of what has to be done. But I think that there are definitely, as I said, agencies that have made huge, huge leaps. So good for them, and they know who they are. Those of you that haven't, best you start doing something about it.
Well, there you go. There's a challenge for 2020. And Virginia, I've got to say, I've been lucky enough to do lots and lots of fun things over the years. But sitting here and, you know, sharing in your success is probably one of the nicest things I've done in a long time.
So, thanks, Gordon.
Enjoy your holiday.
And
to all of you out there, how do people get hold of you? I know you're not a great Twitter player. I mean, you're in there, but it's like a labor of love. We get hold of you through Magnetic Connection.
Either that or G2 Connection.
Or G2 Connection. And or otherwise, just, you know, contact us on the show if you want to get hold of us. And please tune in, subscribe. We'd love to have you. And please, in the absence of the doc, thank you for giving me the privilege today of doing this without you, doc. Please let us have topics that you'd like to discuss. We really would like this to become an open forum for the industry in 2020. And Jenny, you know I'm going to get you back next year because we've got the big discussion.
Yeah, we do.
So great. You're going to be well rested. And I think we've got to look at the change and how, through the Marketing Research Foundation and BRC and PSC, how do we rebuild that which has been lost and put ourselves on the front foot. So challenge to everybody for 2020. Guys, you know, enjoy the year ahead of you. And Jenny, thanks for being here. It was really great fun.
Thanks, Gordon. It was great being here.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show, and take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.